Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. On today's call, we have Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren, Chief Investment Strategist John Portwood, Investment Directors Richard Chauvin and Jeffrey Tangus, and special guest, Senior Portfolio Manager Austin Zombrecker. With that, I'll pass the call over to David Lundgren, who will be the moderator.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this month's special edition of our Market and Economic Update Call. On this call today, we're going to recap 2017 and give you our thoughts on the outlook for 2018. Before we do that, I have a special announcement. John Portwood, who's been a member of our team and a leader of our team for 20 years, will be retiring this Friday. So this is John's last call. So incredibly thankful to be able to work with John all these years. He's been in the business for 50 years, which is it's truly amazing. And John, I can't thank you enough for all that you've done for our team and for our clients. Thanks, John. Let's go ahead and get started. And, I think what we're going to do to start this call off is talk about 2017, and we're going to kind of walk around the room, figuratively speaking, and talk about the biggest headlines of 2017. And I think it's only appropriate that we start with you, John. What do you think the biggest headline of 2017 was? Johnny there?
I beg your pardon. I was on mute. I even said thank you for the nice things you said about me, and you didn't hear me. So, all right, here we go. We've had two quarters of 3% real GDP growth this year. We haven't had two consecutive quarters. That's the last two. We really haven't had two consecutive quarters like that for a while. There was a cyclical uptrend, a short-term cyclical burst of activity. Back, it ended about 2014, I guess, and we had a dip in activity in, going into 2015, 2016. But two quarters in a row of 3%, we just haven't seen that in a while. And it could be that when the fourth quarter numbers are in, we'll see 3% for that as well, or maybe close to it. So it looks like we're going to have a pretty good little string of numbers here.
Okay, excellent. Austin. Headline for 2017, biggest story.
Besides the Saints making the playoffs.
Besides the Saints making the playoffs.
I would say it's a strong stock market, Dave. The S&P was up over 21%. International markets did even better. They were up 27% in developed markets and over 37% in emerging markets. This is the first time ever there's been positive returns for every month of the year. We're now 14 consecutive months of positive returns, 20 of the past 21. And nine consecutive positive quarters on the S&P 500. Blue chips, they did even better. The Dow was up 28%. It's the second best year in a decade for the Dow. There were 71 new closing all-time highs. And I think kind of one of the understated parts of the story is it wasn't only the returns, but the low volatility. There were only 8 1% plus or minus days on the S&P 500. That's the fewest since 1965. And we're closing in on the longest period ever without a 5% correction. We're over 400 trading days now. So strong market and low volatility.
I couldn't agree more. Just an amazing run. How about you, Richard? I think I know where you're going.
Yeah, I've been I've had the pleasure of talking about tax reform for most of 2017, and I really think it was at the root of a lot of investor and consumer behavior. This year, there's been obviously skepticism about it, which we'll talk more about later. But I think one of the characteristics of this recent recovery in economic growth has been the CEO sentiment, which, of course, affects hiring. It affects capital spending decisions. And the prospect of tax reform, as it grew stronger through the year, really supported those numbers. So I think tax reform had a real beneficial effect on the economy and the stock market in 2017, even before it was passed.
Great. And I think it's sort of all work hand in hand, the improved growth, strong stock market, Some of it could be obviously tied to the news on the tax reform front. Jeffrey Tangus.
Good morning.
Biggest headline for 2017.
Well, I think it is the absence of inflation. I think inflation is always a big part of investing. And what for a couple of years now, the Federal Reserve has said 2% inflation is just right around the corner. And, of course, they're looking at all the things we just talked about, a good stock market, a good economy, tax reform, all things that are, that should produce some higher inflation. But during 2017, the Fed was really looking for something close to 2% based on a core inflation number, ex food and ex energy, and what they got was something closer to 1.5%. And for the Fed, that might not seem much to you or I, but to the Fed, that's a big miss. Remember, the Fed has 300 PhD economists on staff covering and analyzing the economy each and every day. So you would think they could be able to nail this down. But they missed again. They've actually been missing since about 2012 when the economy really softened up and inflation expectations as well as actual inflations both took a big nosedive. So the Fed is all along the Fed said, well, this is all just what they call, quote, transitory. This is just a short-term phenomenon, which, of course, has lasted for several years. But it's all based on the very low unemployment numbers that we've seen now for a couple years and the thought that higher wage inflation, which is one of the main components of inflation, which are wages in the United States, that wage inflation was going to pick up, and it hasn't. And that's been a disappointment for – it was a disappointment for Barack Obama. It's a disappointment for Donald Trump. And there's always – and people continue to say that better wages are right around the corner. We shall have to wait and see on that. The reality is out of the financial crisis in 2008, there has been something of a mindset, a change in psychology in America that has that's made it difficult to get wage inflation. And so we'll just have to see. It certainly looks better than ever where we sit today, given – the expectations in the for the economy going forward, but inflation or the absence of inflation during 2017, I think, is one of the major stories, Dave.
Okay, good one. I'm kind of surprised no one mentioned cryptocurrencies or, in particular, Bitcoin. Anybody want to give their thoughts? That was really kind of a headline at the end of the year. We haven't talked about it much on the call.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and chime in there, Dave. Obviously, we've seen prices go kind of bananas for Bitcoin last year. Price went from about 1,000 to 20,000, back to about 15,000 where it is today. There's higher interest as measured by Google Trends in Bitcoin than there is for Trump, North Korea, and CrossFit combined. And it, needless to say, is a pretty highly volatile asset class. I think there's two main cases for it. The bull case is that this is the beginning of a new reserve digital currency that's decentralized. The blockchain peer-to-peer technology is going to be largely adapted. And if that's the case, I think there's probably a good way to run. The bear case is that we're well into a speculative bubble, that it's unregulated and there's a lot of bad actors in the space for something that has no intrinsic value and whose price run-up as a bubble has dwarfed other price run-ups. A couple signs of some things that seem a bit manic. There's over 1,000 other cryptocurrencies, of which Bitcoin is the first, the major one. Dogecoin, for instance, started out literally as a joke and now is worth $2 billion. The Long Island Iced Tea Company, which was a beverage company, changed its name to the Long Blockchain Corporation, and the stock tripled overnight. So there's certainly some things we're keeping an eye on, but Bitcoin is going to be in the headlines for the foreseeable future.
Okay. Thank you, Austin. Definitely A lot of good headlines, and really it was an incredible year in many aspects. You know, we obviously talked about the stock market, and we'll talk about the stock market some more. But let's talk about going forward. If we were to fast forward a year from now, what do you think the pressing issues for 2018 will be? And we'll start with you again, John.
Okay, is growth sustainable? That's the big question. You know, we've had a couple of quarters, maybe three quarters in a row of pretty decent GDP growth. And the question is, you know, is that sustainable over time? Well, I look at it a couple of different ways. I know we're going to talk about, you know, a change in the tax code that might add, you know, some things going forward. But just looking at what we've got currently and not what might come, we've had no material growth in real household disposable income since the crash. I think the growth rate is something like is less than 1% annualized per year. So there hasn't been any real change there. And more recently, the savings rate has been falling and consumer debt has been rising again. And that may be, you know, some explanation about what has happened for in GDP growth for the last couple of quarters. Now, that's probably not sustainable, and if that's what's supporting consumer spending at the present time and there's no real growth in real disposable income going forward, that's going to put a crimp probably in future growth rates and may indicate that, again, this is one of those cyclical, you know, run-ups, and then we go back to something that's somewhat slower. Demographics are unfavorable. We all know that. Everybody's been talking about that for a long time. You've got a decline in labor force growth. You've also got a low productivity situation going on now. No one is really quite sure why that low productivity number is there, why that's happening, but declining labor force growth, low productivity does not augur well for, you know, above average growth going forward. Now, could that change? Yeah. I mean, it could change with new technologies, new policies, and so forth and so on. That's certainly a reasonable outlook. However, it looks like, according to all reports, that the administration is going to decide to pursue an aggressive protectionist approach to trade. So, you know, you've got all these other issues going on that might lead. You don't know exactly where they're going to lead. And at the same time, you might have a protectionist approach to trade that turns out to crimp growth going forward. So it's still up in the air. You know, my guess is that we stay in a relatively low growth world for some time with occasional bursts of activity. But, of course, things could turn out to be a little bit better. I mean, let's hope so. You know, currently, the outlook, given the data we currently have, would be for something more moderate going forward.
Okay. We'll definitely keep our eye on that for sure. Austin, what do you think the biggest pressing issue for 2018 might be?
You know what, Dave? I'm keeping an eye on geopolitical issues out there. I would consider the geopolitical scene there are certain things on the horizon that are of concern. They're all low to very low probability kind of events, but they would have a major impact if one of them occurred. Obviously, at the top of the docket is North Korea. It's the most pressing with their increasing ballistic missiles tests, including shooting a missile over Japan, the U.S. and allied military buildup in the area, and some of the growing bombastic rhetoric between the countries. There's just an increased chance of miscalculation there and sparking some sort of war. Obviously, you know, a nuclear conflict is the worst-case scenario, but a conventional war would do a lot of damage as well, especially given the region's proximity to South Korea and Japan, and those being two integral players of the global economy. Also, keep an eye on what's going on in Iran. In the past few weeks, there's been a rise in anti-government protests. we're kind of viewing those as potentially a sign of a weakening regime in Iran. The Trump administration has taken a hardline stance on the nuclear deal that was approved by the Obama administration, so there's some issues there. And there's always tensions with the Saudis and the Iranians that could all of those things could destabilize the region. The major kind of story of our time is going to continue to be China and how their emergence as a superpower, how they deal with it, and how the U.S. deals with it. China has become a major global player. They're looking for some resource plays in Africa. There's a continued issue in the South China Sea as to whose territory that belongs to. There's about six countries there that are fighting over it. And that's certainly something we're going to keep an eye on and how the U.S. Responds to that. And then, you know, there's oldies but goodies, I would call them. You know, what's going on with Russia, Syria, Ukraine, Venezuela all have geopolitical issues that could spiral into an economic problem for the U.S. And lastly, but not least, this is the year in developed markets of Brexit. You know, the U.K. decided to leave the Eurozone 2 years ago, and this is the year that they're supposed to leave. There's been some fairly tense negotiations, and we're keeping an eye on that to make sure it's an orderly exit. So a lot of things happening on the geopolitical sphere that we're keeping an eye on.
Never a dull moment. So we'll definitely have to keep an eye on that. How about you, Richard? Biggest pressing issue for 18?
Well, I think it's the maintenance of some positive earnings growth in the stock market here in the U.S. and even globally. And I think back to tax reform again, I think that provides a very nice boost to the possibility or the likelihood of corporate America being able to produce high single-digit, low double-digit earnings growth for the next few years due to the corporate tax cut, which again provides a very nice support under a very highly valued stock market, something we've been concerned about for some time. And the valuation's not going to dramatically decline as a result of this, but if tax reform can help earnings growth maintain at 7, 8, 9% for several years, it does provide the stock market a little more support, which is certainly good for investors. I think even looking out beyond 2018, if I could just expand the question a little bit, the real benefit of this tax reform bill is its ability to produce or help produce a growth in productivity that John mentioned earlier, because there's a really nice experiment that's going to go on with this bill in that it provides 100% capital spending deductions for corporations for 5 years. So I think there's going to be a pretty big ramp up in capital spending, which could be the source of productivity improvement in the future. That could be very, very good for this economy.
Great. Thank you, Richard. Jeff Tangus.
Yes.
Last but not least, what do you think the pressing issue for 2018 might be?
Well, it's going to come later part of the year, and I would call it the midterm elections. Obviously, there's plenty to talk about going on in Washington these days, but with the backdrop of tax reform and an economy that looks like it's starting to get some traction here, what happens in Washington, it could have a material impact. Obviously, it's a midterm election. Midterms are typically not kind to the party in power, the presidential party in power. It wasn't kind to Barack Obama in his first term. Wasn't kind to Bill Clinton in his first term. It's likely not to be too kind to Donald Trump as well. His approval ratings are essentially below where those two other presidents were, but he tends to poll low in the first place. So it could be painful for the Republicans. What we see now, very early on, and these are generally generic polls, but what we see now is the Republicans would lose the House, hang on to the Senate, and so you've got a divided government there, and essentially we would move back probably to something like gridlock. And gridlock is not necessarily bad, but it does bring some uncertainty to the economy and to the investing situation. But more than those things, the actual specifics are that that there are several agenda items or important things in the economy that have not been addressed yet, that may be addressed before the midterms, but may not. And if they don't get addressed, then it leaves, you know, their future in doubt. And there are things like our infrastructure stimulus program, things that typically Republicans and Democrats all can agree on. They love to spend money, and everybody loves to spend money on a bridge in their own district. So you would think that that would be something that they could agree on, but nothing is typical in this day and age in Washington. So the infrastructure program is one of the things that sort of is in limbo. Trade renegotiation, it goes on to various degrees depending upon which hemisphere the Trump administration is working in, but that's a huge deal for us economically, and it's a wild card right now. Good things that are going on that could be sensitive to a change in political power in Washington would be consumer confidence. The consumer feels really good. Business confidence is good. Any kind of uncertainty could shake that. Certainly the rollback of regulation, I think, would slow down pretty dramatically because of the gridlock. So regulatory relief is likely to slow to a trickle if the Democrats take back the House. And then finally, the big one, which is a possible impeachment proceeding by the Democrats. They talk about it a lot. But whether it would actually get done is another thing. But regardless, it would certainly introduce a lot of uncertainty, a great deal of consternation coming out of Washington, and just can't be good for the economy overall. So that's why I think that the midterm elections are going to be very important, and in all likelihood, we'll see a sea change of some sort during the election.
Well, that will definitely steal the headlines as we move into the latter part of 2018. Let's go ahead and I'm going to quickly review some of the performance information of 2017, and then we'll talk about our outlook for 2018 on both the stock and bond front. And it was really an amazing year. I'm sure there's an asset class somewhere that didn't have a positive return this year, but all of the major asset classes finished the year with positive results. Anything that was fixed income-like or was really focused on yield or producing an interest rate for shareholders all finished kind of in the mid-single digit range. So high quality intermediate bonds, whether we're talking about taxables or tax-frees, high yield, bank loans, REITs, all of those asset classes produce returns, just call it somewhere between 3% and 6%, very rough numbers. Obviously, Austin talked a little bit about the year in stocks, and it was truly an amazing year. In terms of the return produced and then the lack of volatility, I really haven't seen anything like it in my career. And we talked about the S&P 500 up almost 22%. So large caps did better than small caps. Small caps had a very, very good year, but they were up almost 15%, so a little bit below large caps. And then on the style side of things, growth outperformed value. Growth was up 27% when we're talking about large cap stocks. Value was up 15%. So from a historical perspective, that's a pretty significant spread between growth and value in 2017. And then on the international front, it was kind of a quiet but very, very strong year for international. I'd say the last really 5 years, international has struggled versus U.S. stocks, but not in 2017. IFA, which is an index for the stocks of developed countries, was up 25%. International small cap stocks were up 33%. And then emerging market equities, best performing major asset class, up 37% for the year. So really gaudy numbers. You know, it was a great year, and hopefully we can continue in the same direction, maybe not in that same magnitude in 2018. And let's go ahead and go right to it. And what we're going to do, as we've done in past years, is we're going to have John give the bearish case for stocks in 2018, and then I'm going to ask Austin to state the bullish case, and then I'll try and pull them all together before we move over to the fixed income side with Jeff. So, John, talk to us a little bit about your concerns for 2018 with the stock market.
Okay. As everyone knows, I always worry more about what can go wrong than what can go right, and that's probably an outgrowth of my early experience with extremely volatile markets some years ago. But in any case, let's see what we've got today that makes this outlook look a bit risky. We have overvaluation. A couple of commenters have already talked about that today already. High consumer confidence and readings. We're closing in on peak readings that we saw in the past. And, of course, peak readings in customer and consumer confidence often coincide with, you know, with peaks in the market. You know, sentiment is high and so forth and so on. We got rising speculative activity, Bitcoin. Austin talked about that. That's not necessarily stocks, but it's an example of the speculation that exists in the market today. Total margin debt now is about double that of the 2000 peak when we had the technology bubble, so that's a significant concern. Cash is underweight in portfolios and near a record low. That's based on a research study that included portfolios totaling about $20 trillion. So everybody's in, or they appear to be in, and perhaps forced to buy risk assets to get returns because interest rates on cash are not very very high. Let me give you a Euro bond example when you wonder where a lot of that cash has gone, not just into stocks, but there's some bonds in the Eurozone that yield less than 2%. The bonds are trading currently at a premium. Earnings of the underlying companies or representative companies of those bonds don't cover the interest expense, and yet the bonds are selling at a premium. Now, that has a lot to do with what the Eurozone Central Bank is doing with bond purchases over there, but just kind of gives you an idea of what's happening in the bond market and what might be out there that we really can't see. And finally, the Fed is raising interest rates and trying to normalize interest rates, whatever that means, which is not necessarily positive. So you've got overvaluation, high consumer confidence reading, rising speculative activity. Total margin debt is pretty high, cash is underweight in portfolios, and the Fed is raising interest rate and tightening policy. So historically speaking, these are classic warning signals of a vulnerable market and a possible return to volatility. Now, volatility, I'll put that in quotation marks, that means that's another terminology, Wall Street terminology for falling prices and a reversion to the mean. So, you know, the risk-return picture is not particularly good at this point, and, you know, does it mean the market necessarily has to go down? No, but it means that the risk is there. So, anyway, that's the current story, not particularly positive from a risk standpoint.
All right, John. Well, Austin, you heard the left.
I'm glad I went first.
Less rosy outlook for the market in 18. Why would you think the market would go up? What's your bullish case?
Well, there's plenty of good things on the horizon too, Dave. And I'm going to start with monetary and fiscal policy and the tailwinds that they're adding. On the fiscal side, obviously Richard mentioned, talked a lot about the tax reform bill, dropping the corporate tax to 21%, basically a 40% cut in the corporate tax rate. That's going to have a major impact and be a real big tailwind. It's going to help certain sectors more than others, obviously, but, you know, small caps, financials, retail and energy, we would all expect to outperform. On the fiscal side, again, the deregulation, especially in the financial industry, is certainly helpful. You could expect to see an increase in the velocity of money, which has fell pretty consistently since 2008. Any boost in the velocity of money there could really help growth considerably. And then on the monetary side of things, you know, John mentioned that the Fed is raising rates, which is true, but rates are still extremely low. And as Jeff mentioned, inflation is very muted. You know, one thing we're keeping an eye on is what's going on with the yield curve. The yield curve is getting flatter, meaning the short end and the long end are getting closer to the same number. Historically, when the short becomes higher than the long, we call that an inverted curve, and that's a warning sign of a recession. But, you know, it looks from where we are right now that we're quarters, if not years away, from that happening. We talked about economic growth. John mentioned the 3% economic growth. You know, most people had expected about a 2% economic growth, so a 3% economic growth is obviously a massive tailwind, and those monetary and fiscal side of things are going to help. Business confidence is extremely strong. We would expect that to continue. On a mania standpoint, you know, IPOs and new issues are still very modest, and from a technical standpoint, the trends are very robust and very strong. So they're not flashing many warning signs right now. One thing we're keeping an eye on, which I guess, you know, would be both a warning sign and a good sign, because prices would go up, is the potential for a melt up, in the market, where we would see a rapid increase in stock prices. That would be a warning sign similar to other large market corrections, 2008, 2000, the early 70s, and during the Great Depression, there were melt-ups. So a rapid increase in stock market prices would definitely cause us to make some changes in our portfolio.
Great. Thank you, Austin and John. And just to kind of pull all those thoughts together, you know, when I think about, you know, what we do from an asset management perspective, you know, I sometimes think we get paid to worry. And, you know, we definitely have a cautious outlook to stocks. And, you know, valuation is a poor short-term indicator of future price movements. And we definitely, there's a fair amount of momentum in the market right now. We can definitely see valuation climb from here. But I think the underlying message that we're really trying to get across to our clients is that 2017 was really sort of an outlier, where you have this, would seem like the Dow moving up 100 points every day, that Austin talked about the lack of down 1% days, and, you know, we've gone 400 and something days without a 5% pullback. That is not the norm for investing in stocks. So, you know, we do think stocks play an important part of portfolio construction and should remain a large part of one's investment portfolio, depending on their risk tolerance and time horizon. But we want to make sure that everyone understands that the environment that we've been in isn't necessarily where we're going forward. We all hope it does, but it's really not, I don't think, the base case based on past market experiences. So with that, you know, poor bonds, they're feeling very unloved given what the stock market has done really since 2009, but also the past year. So Jeff, the unloved asset class manager, if you could maybe kind of give us a quick review of 2017, talk about where the Fed's going, and then your outlook for 2018.
Well, Dave, with an intro like that, I feel like the Maytag repairman of investing.
Go.
Bonds had a very good year, but as Dave indicates, it just pales beside what took place in the equity markets, both here and abroad. So with that, let's just recap 2017 real quick. Most people are aware the Federal Reserve raised rates three times in 2017, 25 basis points each, that's 75 basis points. The Fed typically and historically controls the very short end of interest rates, so they control overnight interest rates. They control most things out to about 2 years. They have a heavy influence. When you get out beyond that, the 7 to 10 year, what we would call the longer end of investing, of the investing curve, the Fed doesn't have nearly as much influence, although I'll quickly add, with all their quantitative easing and tightening in the past couple of years, which they've never done before, they have a little influence out there. But aside from that, the Fed typically doesn't control the longer end. Investors control the longer end. So what happened last year was the Fed raised short rates, but the longer end, the 10-year, was basically unchanged. And this really was, I think Austin touched on it, called it the flat yield curve. This is something that is of concern to really everyone in the investing public, largely because an inverted yield curve, if it gets exacerbated, an inverted yield curve typically would mean a slowdown in the economy. Nobody wants to see that, bond or stock market investors. So 2017 saw the yield curve get flatter as short rates rose and long rates did not rise. That was something that most people did not anticipate. That was a function of what we talked about earlier, which was inflation, long-term inflation and expectations really remaining flat or even drifting a little bit lower. So from a 2017 perspective, it was a little unusual and certainly a little unexpected. What really wasn't unexpected was with the good news in the economy and tax reform and all the other things we've already talked about was risk assets, and we've talked about stocks as a risk asset, did very well. Risk assets on the bond side also did very well. So while in general the bond market had good returns, as Dave Lundgren indicated, where the really good returns were in high-yield bonds, international debt, primarily emerging market debt, places like that where you had returns approaching double digits. So it in our world, we often refer to it as a risk-on environment, which is generally a function of the Goldilocks economy, where you have an improving economy, good corporate profits, low inflation, relatively stable interest rates, all those things combined together to produce a risk-on environment. Well, that's what 2017 was like. I'll give high marks to the Fed for sort of negotiating, or I should say navigating the year, producing marginally higher short-term rates, but not enough to concern anybody. So 2017, from a bond market perspective, essentially the longer you invested, the better you did, and then also the more risk, the lower quality you invested, the better you did. This coming year looks like it probably will be more the same. I'll throw in one huge caveat, is that if we do get a big correction in the stock market, all bets are off, and it's a flight to quality at that point. But absent of that, if things continue on the trajectory as we see them now, it's likely to be somewhat more the same for 2018.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for joining today. Join us next month for our monthly market and economic update call. Thank you.